The Southwest WA Drought Resilience Adoption and Innovation Hub acknowledges the traditional custodians throughout Western Australia and their continuing connection to the land, waters and community. It pays its respects to elders past and present and extends that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Hello, I'm Julianne Hill, Hub Adoption Manager. This podcast series on dry season responses is brought to you by the Southwest WA Drought Hub and funded through Future Drought Fund. In this series, we'll hear from growers and industry experts on managing dry season responses, ranging from early planning to tactical decision making as the season changes throughout the year and setting up for your following season.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. In this episode, we are talking about the southern rangelands and particularly profitable grazing systems during drought in those areas. In this episode, we're going to be trying to understand the benefits of managing total grazing pressure and reduced or safe stocking rates as a profitable and climate resilient strategy for the southern rangelands. To do so, I'm joined by two people who know a hell of a lot more about this topic than I do. Both from DBIRD, I'm with Brad Plunkett and Christoph Diabaty. Thanks for joining me on the podcast, gentlemen. To begin with, I want to get to know you both a little bit and find out what it is that makes you qualified to be talking to us about the southern rangelands and these grazing systems. Brad, can you start off just by telling us a little bit about yourself and the research that you do?
I've been researching southern rangelands production systems for about 6 or 7 years and have done a lot of research in particular production systems.
And over to you, Christoph. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. I'm Argentinian, so I've been working in the southern rangelands for the last 4 years, doing mainly modeling, economic modeling and bioeconomics, also with Brad and a couple more people there. That was my background in this space.
I want to talk about the southern rangelands. I want to get a couple of definitions out of the way. So when we're talking southern rangelands, what area do we actually mean by that and what climate conditions are we talking about in that area?
Well, I would say that it's the Gascoyne, Murchison, Goldfields and the Lunavor mainly. That's what we understand by southern rangelands, mainly arid regions, highly variable rainfall, lower than 300 mils per year. It's really variable across the years. Probably similar to the southern part of the MT, like northern arid part of the South Australia as well. So similar regions.
And the southwest of Queensland and the western part of New South Wales, that's semi-arid areas. Yep.
All right. And I mentioned at the beginning in my intro, I said both the words reduce stocking rates and safe stocking rates. Can you tell me, I guess, what the difference is? Are they the same thing? What terminology should we be using here?
I would prefer the safe rather than reduced because they imply two different things. So reduce, you're reducing mainly, and in many people's head, reducing is less money. Whereas safe could imply not reducing, just maintaining, but be more efficient, more profitable at the end of the day. So this is a terminology we grew up from the Northern Territory government. But what they understand is using, it's mainly based on utilization rates of pasture growth, mainly. So the stocking rate would be dependent on the pasture growth you have. That's why it means safe. And it also allows you land condition improvement over time. So that's something we're going to expand on later, but that's the principles.
And it's that in relation to land condition and total grazing pressure. So it's two sides of the coin.
All right, you guys have been doing a lot of work in this space looking at these grazing systems and just what is the best grazing system to have in these conditions and in these areas. But can you talk to me and give me a bit of an explanation of the work that you've actually been doing?
Yeah, definitely. So the two big questions we have been popping around was, what's the production system or the herd structure that producers could choose when in managing these rangelands or the stations, what is the stocking rate they should run on those stations? So in a nutshell, what we found is that heavier, or let's call it slower, steers and heifers are the optimum production systems within the systems in the southern ranges of WA. Economically and environmentally, we want to expand on that regard as well. And if we have a safe stocking rate strategy, it's the optimum because we live in a haystack. It's a concept we're going to expand a little bit further. But it's ungrazed feed to survive in the drought years, consecutive or not, but the droughts.
And that haystack is also the tool that contributes then to improving land condition over time, which cycles your productivity up over time.
So with this modelling work that you're doing, what exactly is it that you've been trying to find out, and how is that information going to help the farmers in the southern rangelands?
What we're trying to find is a system that would make producers drought resistant, drought resilient at the end of the day. That would help them to increase their gross margins and cycle up all the system across time. So there are not many handles that a producer can choose to change things within the station. That mainly is the herd structure, the stocking rate, or that given set, it's then how do you manage the total grazing pressure at the end of the day. So how we control ferals, native herbivores, phantom herd that you may have, so it's pasture efficiency. That would give you an idea of the total grazing pressure. That would help you improve pasture generation, land condition improvement. That would improve your gross margins. You have more money, you can improve. Start spending that money in building up the infrastructure that will help you further to improve the control over your herd, would improve your efficiency of the herd. Again, you're making more money cycling up the system, so you get to this. And this is mainly based on the experience of different people across the Central Australia. So that could be Bob Gervis, Ken Shaw in Cunningham, WA, Oldman Plains in the Northern Territory. So all those systems are systems that are cycling up the whole system as a whole. So the idea is to show how those systems, or how we can get there at the end of the day. And that's something we are building tools, building stuff to help producers to get there. But also it's how those systems can be cycled up and go further to improve land condition. And then we got other biodiversity, carbon credits that could help to get there or be a consequence of this cycling up the system.
Big question then. What's the winner? You've been doing all this work into what's the best system. So what's the best system?
I think it's something we discussed previously, using this safe stocking rate. Just to be honest, and it's something we're working on, what's safe? Utilization rate would be depending on the land condition, the land system you're in. So that is really dependent on the station. So I wouldn't say do I have one solution for everyone. So we have tailored solution for everyone. But the principles are the same across the different analysis we did. So having a safe stocking rate, keep on cycling up the system, depending on the system you have, but cycling up it. What do you think, Brad?
Yes, and it's, again, management over animals in a dry landscape and setting yourself up so that when there's a big rain, you're able to recruit plant matter back into the system. That's those kicks. That's what you're trying to do, is set that up. In the meantime, you're trying to put together a set of infrastructure that gives you control over those animals. You control the water. They have to come to you. And you get to then harvest the cattle that you don't want out of your system, the things which are difficult to catch, and those animals that you're not able to account for. And you do that, having put together the infrastructure, by running double musters, by having very clean musters. That's how you harvest that extra capital that's out there wandering around and turn it into the capital that you not want to need, which is the infrastructure you need to control access to water and reduce your mustering costs.
All the capital is sitting there. It's free capital at the end of the day. It's not accounted. It's not on the books. So that you have a clean master, you can go grab that capital, put in your infrastructure and make huge change on your system. That was the point.
Just to clarify, that capital you're talking about are cattle that are not being harvested.
Yes. The Mickey's, the phantom herd that you have around there.
I understand with this that you guys aren't just pulling this information out of your hats. There's a fair bit of modelling evidence, empirical data that's gone into it. Can you tell us, I guess, from a scientific basis, where this information is coming from?
So there are Two well-known examples in the Northern Territory, Bob Purvis's system, and WA Ken Shaw's system, that the evidence of these types of systems in operation. And then there's Old Man Plains, which we have a close, increasingly close working relationship with, who have put this system together and tracked all the data. So that's why we're working very closely with them to bring our modelling skills to combine with their scientific knowledge to put together a robust bioeconomic model.
The other case study we were working with, we're trying to publish his case studies, Ken Shaw in Gundry Station, which he was keen to share with us all his data and what he experienced on running the station for over 20 years. But coming back to Old Man Plains as well, I think it's a great opportunity for us in WA as a state just to bring the scientific evidence they have and try to bring it to Western Australia, because unfortunately we hadn't had that kind of scientific evidence. But we are lucky enough that we are working on the economics on top of this, and we can make reasonable and economic sense of whatever they're doing. So I think that's the important thing. My main constraint, it's how we do this. And that's the question I had from different pastoralists. It's, okay, that's lovely, that's great, and impressive that I've had them, what they have done. They have improved the land condition. It's full of grass everywhere. How we get there? That's all the tools we are trying to build. We are trying fact sheets and calculators to help them to say, making economic sense to all the different strategies they're doing. And on the parallel way, also we have the Southern Ranges Revitalization Project run by DPED as well, which is also helping to improve land condition over time. So if you haven't subscribed to Phase 3, just do it as soon as possible. That is a pretty good project. The government helping you guys, pastoralists, to improve your land condition at the end of the day.
I want to touch on something that you said earlier, Brad. You talked about infrastructure being a really critical part of these systems. And obviously, Christoph just mentioned the tools that are necessary. So I think it's important to note that it's all very good and well to have all this data and all of this modelling that shows what the best option is, but how do we actually get there and what do we need to do? So, Brad, are you able to give us some information on, I guess, what practical steps people in these areas could be taking to, I guess, help implement this system on their farms?
So Chris will go into some detail in a minute on his modelling, of which he's done a very fine job of modelling the relative changes in herds in response to drought over time. But all of that is predicated on control over total grazing pressure, and that means controlling access to water. So that's fencing and that's trap yards around your waters. By doing that and creating an extensive trap work system, these stations, these systems have been able to move to a very low-cost mustering systems, clean musters, twice a year. And that then enabled them to harvest their cattle that are not, the ones that they wanted to clean out, the ones they needed to get rid of for genetic improvement, the numbers that they didn't know that they had. All that is capital being able to be accessed for further investment. So it's a staged recovery. The quicker you can do it, the more you can get this system into place, the faster you can move to a lower cost structure, because then you're not using intensive mustering systems, which are expensive and probably not clean. That's the first big caveat. That's the first big thing trying to get at. So that's the first, as we're modelling the data in conjunction with Old Man Plains and their experiences of increasing land condition over time, turning off good cattle, more kilos of beef, fewer head, but more kilos of beef over time for sale, and setting up their landscape so that when they had big rainfall events, they recruited an improvement in pasture and kicked up their systems.
And probably on top of that, Brad, and coming back to the modelling, what I would say is that once you set your infrastructure in place, you can start playing and say, okay, what is my target market or what I want to sell at the end of the day? And that's where the modelling came and say, look, the most profitable herd structure is the one that you sell those 30 months, 500, 560 kilogram steers. And I think that's a key in the sense that it's pure animals. thus fewer jobs for the pastoralists. Producing more kilograms of beef, which is good, but even further, you produce more valuable kilograms of beef. So you have this double effect of making more kilograms of beef more valued. So at the end of the day, you're going to make even more money. Also, you are reducing your turnoff, so you sell less animals, less trucks. So again, it's more getting more efficient at the end of the day. This could be probably fine-tuning at the end of the day. So once you put your total grazing pressure in line and you have a tight control over all your animals in the station, then you can start going to the next step. Which is my herd strategy I want to go through? What's my genetics? So I always like this genetics by environment, by management, just having the three. So once we tied the management, we'd be putting infrastructure in place, we can go to the genetics. Because we are playing this environment, it's variable, have huge droughts. When you have huge droughts, you need to destock. And again, what happens? We have a drought and we need to destock. What's more profitable system or herd structure? Again, here's where the modeling can help us. Say, look, if you have this kind of fewer animals herd structure with high turnoff, well, it's easier to recover at the end of the day. We will recover faster if you need to destock. But if you run on top of this a safe stocking rate, as we mentioned, you have a haystack developed, so you have feeding on your back that you can use eventually, then you don't need to even destock and go through drought with whatever you got on the station without destocking.
And the key insight out of that is that over time, your rate of return is much better. You're not a forced seller, not a forced buyer, but you're able to make use of those up ticket prices when coming out of drought, and you're able to maintain your production over that time. So your cash flow stays good.
Yeah, and on top of that, even further, Brad, having a low-cost mastering, low-cost and low-labor intensive in the sense that you don't need many people, you can be tactical in when you master. If you see good prices or you see that you need to start tomorrow, you can start. So you don't need to wait for a lot of things to happen to be able to start mastering.
That's very true. You are self-reliant when it comes to that. So you're not relying upon contractors or someone else to come in. And if there's holdups or whatever, you're not relying upon lots of additional machinery and equipment. You've got what you need there, and a simple, low-cost system, cheap.
How important is this strategy for, I guess, riding out or I just making better decisions during consecutive dry years? Because that is kind of the system that we're looking at the moment, especially with the weather being the way it is this year, you know, a couple of dry years in a row. So, yeah, how important is this strategy to help people on these stations, yeah, ride out when we do have 2, 3, potentially even more dry years in a row, especially with the climatic trends going the way they are?
Probably I would say that you need to build your strategy beforehand, not during the drought. Unfortunately, if you're not prepared when a drought hits, you're going to suffer it, unfortunately. So the idea of the whole system, it's you're building up your system so that you can go through the drought. So how long it would take us to set up the system, it's a question we are still willing to answer. And we are under research and collaboration with the NT. To do that, but we need to build up the system so we can be drought resilient.
I want to talk about the tools that were mentioned earlier. We haven't gone into too many of them, but you guys are trying to create practical tools that stations can use to help them establish these systems, help them keep working, help make sure they run properly. What tools are we talking about?
So on the more generic scale, there's the creation of a bioeconomic model, which is, you know, the physical dimensions of the production system overlaid with the economics that we're creating in conjunction with Old Man Plains on the basis of using their very detailed scientific data. And that maps both their livestock production system and their changes in landscape condition over time, the amount of pasture they had. Now, we'll pick that up and then bring that to Western Australia, to another semi-arid area, and apply it here. So there's that scope. And that can be applied at a pastoral enterprise level. What we want paddock level. What we also are doing is the first tool that we're working on in conjunction with that is a trap yard calculator. So what's the first piece of infrastructure people are going to be working with? You know, fencing and trap yards. Okay, so how do you go about it starting from where you are to where you're trying to get to? What's the path that makes most sense for you given your conditions and your financial position and the structure of your herd and what's going on with your station? Given where you are or you're trying to get to, how might we go about addressing those situations? That's the aim of the first tool that we're working on, and with that attendant production of farm notes, background information, et cetera.
I want to ask that tool, the calculator that you're talking about, how simple is that to use? And I guess what information do station owners need to have to be able to make it work? Because I'm assuming they need to be able to put in some data into it to be able to get it to spit out the information they need. So how simple is that process?
So we expect it to be user-friendly in some sense, but data that they probably have around, so weights of animals, what is your expected or whatever you have now in terms of mustering efficiency, what's your death rate, or what do you think is your conception rate, and then what do you expect from this? What are the changes we expect? We have default values on what we think should be expected, and also would be dependent on, okay, how many trap yards are you willing to put in place? One, how many do you have already? So, and we start having this concept of the network of trap yards. If you have only one, that wouldn't have much economic sense, if you like. But if you're having a whole paddock or a whole section of your station is with trap yards, that would eventually have significant results in terms of mastering efficiency, costs, and so on and so forth. Herd efficiency as well. So would it be dependent on the conditions so that the pastoralist can go put some numbers there that would make sense to him and see what he would expect or what we tend to expect in this kind of situations?
And an important part of that too is the design of the trap yards. It depends where you are and what pressures you're under. So if you've got a lot of camel incursion, that might imply one design as opposed to somewhere else where you've don't have a lot of big ferals around, that applies another design. So, and what materials have you got at hand and how much labour have you got and et cetera. So all those things can be crafted into the model and made size specific.
And I'm assuming, like all of the work that you're doing, these calculators, this calculator that you've mentioned, is based on the modelling and that economic work of the stations that you've already been involved with in the NT and the other ones in WA. So again, you're not just pulling this information and chucking it into a calculator and going, oh yeah, we think that might work. That sounds about right. There really is a lot of data that's involved.
Yeah, probably, you know, there's a lot of evidence, like the degree of evidence change depending if it's a research station as the NT would have a lot of information, what experience we have here in WA. But yes, definitely we try to get all the different points of data and put them together so that they make sense at the end of the day. There are some assumptions, unfortunately, because we don't know everything. But all those assumptions we are including on those models are discussed with consultants, pastoralists, and even researchers around WA and the Northern Territory so that it makes sense at the end of the day and we are not putting things out of the blue sky.
Are there more tools, Brad? I feel like we've gone into a lot of detail on a particular calculator, but are there other things that you guys are working on in this space?
Not at this stage. We've got a hands full of these. So, you know, a bioeconomic model of the degree of the richness of the data that old man plains have is a considerable piece of work. It's a big job.
Yeah, just imagine we have growth rates, death rates, that are changing across time. We have pasture growth as well, which is shifting depending on seasonal conditions. So we then have the herd structure and what happens with the herd if we have a drought or not, or how we adjust the structure depending on climate conditions. On top of that, you have the finance of everything, just because we know we live in a business world driven and we need to make financial sense to whatever we are thinking or analyzing. So I think at the end of the day, it's just building all the whole model, pasture, interaction with cattle, herd structure, and the end of finance of everything. Because we really think that at the end of the day, if we want to have real impact on pastoralists, we need to have real impact on the bottom line. So if the bottom line doesn't change or is reduced, we have an issue, and we don't want that. We got to increase to make it more profitable, more resilient, make more profit over time, and build up the whole system.
All right, so we know where we are sitting at the moment, and then this calculator will hopefully tell us where we want to get to. But how do we bridge that gap? How do we actually get from where we're sitting to that ideal scenario and complete that process?
Well, we alluded to before, being able to harvest unwanted cattle from your system. That's one source of transferring capital in the form of cattle, unwanted cattle, and turning them into more productive use in necessary infrastructure, which then lowers your variable costs, your mustering costs, increases your efficiency, and so on. So that could be a slow process. And if there were options to, for instance, if it's possible, be engaged in a carbon farming project, that might be another way of being able to increase that cash flow to speed things up.
Another possible source of income could be biodiversity credits that would be attached for those carbon credits. However, these extra incomes are yet to be decided, so we don't know yet. But actual HIR projects are helping some stations to go through this process, which we know of. So hopefully, when new methods are in place, we will be able to promote them across the industry and get some place to get extra income, get some investment in infrastructure, and eventually improve the system.
And are there certain areas where that's more likely to be an option versus others, or certain areas where that's already taking place at the moment?
Well, it's in the Moggill Woodlands, parts of the Southern Rangelands, and those areas have been mapped. So, yes, it's not going to be available to everybody, but there will be options for those who may wish to contemplate this. And as Chris alluded to, there are already people who have got projects in place, and we know of some who are using that money to finance their infrastructure development.
I might finish off just by asking, with all of these resources that you guys have available, where should people go to find this information? Where is the best place for them to go if they're looking for the tools, for the case studies, for your research, for your modelling? Where should they head?
So over the course of this year, we hope to have a body of work created that's working with Old Man Plains, a bioeconomic model that overlays economic analysis on top of the very rich scientific data that they have on cycling up a system, paddocks that they took over decades ago and have increased quite dramatically the amount of pasture that's available in conjunction with the herd structure and how they've run a fewer number and turn off greater kilos of beef. So we're going to model all of that and then use that model to be able to bring to Western Australia and parameterise it here for our systems. Secondly, we're working on a trapyard calculator and attendant supporting materials. We're also working on a detailed case study of the production system at Kunyu during the time that Ken and Dawn were there, the 3 decades, to provide detailed insight into the actual trajectory of how that system was put together over time. Chris? Would you like to pick up?
Yeah, probably we will be publishing also some papers on the modelling we have been doing here for WA, one which should be published this year in Ag Systems. We submitted a couple more in terms of environmental effects in terms of greenhouse emissions to these systems, showing that also the most economically viable systems are also low in terms of emissions intensity. It's something the supply chain is more worried about nowadays. Eventually, we will, as Brad said, we're going to have some models on the NT that will be supporting this as well. So I think that would be really cool.
Amazing. And as always, everyone, the GGA newsletter or the Dry Season Resources newsletter is a great place to get some extra information. There'll always be tools in there and articles in there on how to deal with dry seasons as they arise. You can also check the show notes of this podcast. There'll always be information in there and links to what our guests have been talking about in the episode. Christoph, Brad, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Sean.
You've just been listening to the Southwest WA Hub's Limited Dry Season podcast series. For further support for decision-making through dry periods, the Drought Hub website features a collection of resources for the livestock, grains and horticultural industries. You can find them under the Resources tab on the Hub website at hub.gga.org.au.
This episode has been brought to you by the Southwest WA Drought Hub, funded by the Future Drought Fund. If you or someone you know is in crisis, contact Lifeline on 131114.